Welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast, where you'll learn how to structure terms and use various creative financing strategies to create profitable deals for short and long-term wealth. Whether you're a buy and hold investor, wholesaler, or flipper, learning creative financing will help you do more deals and unlock profits that you may not even know existed. On the Creative Financing Podcast, we break down actual deals we and our guests are doing and simplify the methods and terms used to execute these strategies. Now, let's dive in and create some terms.
Hello and welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Gallegos, here with
Jeff Rappaport.
We will be continuing to use and talk about examples of the different strategies that we use in creative financing. So in our last episode, we gave examples of wraparound mortgages or all-inclusive trust deeds. And our first example, we used we only used one note as a wraparound. The second example, we used two notes as a wraparound. And what the biggest difference there was is we were just trying to secure the seller's principal down from one versus the other.
Really what we're trying to do, Jonathan, is separate out the seller's equity from the seller's debt and use it gives us some flexibility in terms of how we structure offers. Really, that's all it is. So if that was confusing to you, just know we will show some more examples as we go forward using two notes as opposed to one. Either way works.
Okay. Right. So anyway, today we're going to be talking about subject twos and going through examples of those. So, you know, if you guys aren't familiar with a subject two or with what a subject two is, all it is the seller signing over the property to you without any recourse whatsoever. So you're not creating a second note or a wraparound note for them securing their interest in the property. So are we going to use the same house?
No, Jeff? The new example.
New example. Okay.
Yeah. All right. So one of the things that you should know about subject two is that there is not any documentation that you are giving to the seller that protects the seller. So basically the seller is saying, look, I don't want this property anymore. Here you go. Here it is. I'm signing over the deed. You can have it. The second part of that is, hey, I've already agreed to get a loan on this property and my name is attached to that loan and will remain attached to that loan. So the liability remains with the seller. That's the key part of subject two. I love subject two. I think everyone does, but know that there are some issues with it. And I want to bring up some of the issues just really quickly. This is my own personal opinion, right? So I don't wholesale subject two deals. I don't want the possible repercussions coming from a buyer not performing the way that they should and the seller not having any recourse to get that property back or protect him or herself against a default. Right. So I will not wholesale a subject two deal. I will do an exact wrap, just like we have been talking about, which then gives recourse to the seller. And I'm happy to wholesale that, which is so ridiculously close to subject two that really shouldn't matter. But the second thing is that when I do a subject two on a VA loan, okay, a VA loan, so for military personnel that get special loan provisions because they serve our country, I never want to take a VA loan long term. And when I say long term, I don't want to go more than 5 years. And my preference would be 1 to 3 years. And the reason for it is that the VA loan gives special conditions to the borrower. They can get in for little to no money down. They earn the amount of money that they can qualify for. And I don't want to take that away from them. And if I tie up a VA loan for, let's say, 10, 15 years, that person can't go use that benefit for the next 10 to 15 years.
Now, yeah, because they can only have one VA loan at a time.
They actually can have multiple, but it really depends. Okay. I don't know all the rules and regulations of that, but you are right. Most are only going to qualify for one. It is possible that they can get more than one, but I'm still going to be super careful about that.
You know, if that's true with FHA loans,
what do you mean?
Can you only get one FHA loan at a time?
FHA loan one at a time.
I don't know if you can have two FHA loans at a time. I'm not certain though.
No, I think you can. I don't think FHA has any limits like that. So VA does though. And whether you can get one or two will depend on that particular person. That's beside the point. I don't want to tie up their benefit for long term.
One
of the things that you don't want to end up is in court fighting against someone that's in the military or the elderly.
No.
Right. So, whether you were right or wrong, whether you were ethical or unethical, you will be starting at a disadvantage based on that. Those are two particular types of people that are protected in our society.
Right. So, yeah. You know, you'll just look like the bad guy.
Yeah. Yeah. That, well,
who they are.
You are starting with at least one strike against you. So, yeah. that's not where you want to be. Okay. So, the next thing is that, and this is probably my last issue, is that I don't love getting subject to for the length of the loan. I don't mind getting more long-term, like 10 years, 15 even, but, you know, I see a lot of people that try to get, you know, hey, it's been 2 years and they get the length of the loan. So this loan could be in that seller's name for the next 28 years.
Yeah.
But my experience has always been with subject to is that sellers have short-term memories and that they may have agreed to it. You may have helped them out of a major issue, but a year from now, 6 months from now, 3 months from now, certainly 3 to 5 years from now, when they want to go and, you know, their life has taken a new turn, a positive turn, and they would like to go buy another property, but they can't because this loan is in their name for the next 28 years. To me, that's really not the position you want to be in. You don't want a bunch of sellers that are happy with you for what you did to get them out of that situation, but that situation's in the past now. Now they got a new situation and now you're holding them back.
Right. So, yeah.
As much as you would like it to be 28 years, figure out another solution.
Yeah. Cause I mean, that could be counted against their debt to income ratio.
That's correct.
And, say they get out of their funk in 5 years and they want to buy another house. And anyway, everyone's situation is different, but good point on that, Jeff. You don't want to hold those for 20, 30 year terms.
even if, you know, there are ways to get around the debt to income ratio, especially after some seasoning, right? So when you've demonstrated that you've been making the payments for the last 6 to 12 months, more than likely, depending on the mortgage broker, you would be able to qualify for a loan as if that loan does not even exist. However, you know, let me ask you, Jonathan, as a totally impartial person, if you sold your house, you were in a tough spot and you sold your house subject to, so you're on this loan and, you know, it's still your responsibility to check this loan. You know, if it gets sold to another lender, you know, the taxes change every year, you know, and all this is in your name. And you are just hopeful that me, you know, the person that bought your house, is keeping up with all that. And the longer that I am, don't you think that there's a possibility that something could happen? Yeah, I just had a subject to deal and I violated that. This was the first deal I did when I got back into real estate in 2014. And you know what I did? I wholesaled a subject to deal. And guess what? I got it for how long do you think I got it?
The length of the
you
term.
Betcha.
And it was left.
And then I wholesaled it. And I wholesaled it to someone who then sold it to an owner occupant. Okay. An owner occupant that put down a large sum of money, but needs that long term because he does not have a social security number. And the seller contacted me. This was probably 3-4 months ago. Said that the payment's behind 2 months and he wants his house back. And guess who he's contacting? Me.
Who?
He's contacting me. And I'm like, look, I haven't been a part of this for the last 6-7 years. I don't even know who the actual buyer is. And so now I got to start making some phone calls. And do you know what's happened? You know, this is why I'm so against. Have you ever heard of performance deeds?
No.
Performance deeds is what, you know, a lot of people like to promise people, you know, to do a subject to deal is I'll put a deed in escrow. And if I'm behind a payment that you could just go and get that deed and get it back. Right.
Oh, okay.
Have you ever heard of that?
No, not outside of like contract for deed.
No. Yeah. So it's basically, look, I know subject to doesn't protect you. Here's how we'll protect you.
Okay.
We'll have that deed, you know, signed back to you, held in escrow so that if I'm ever, you know, 30, 60 days behind, you can literally go get that deed, which is not an easy thing to find a title company or escrow service that will hold those deeds and will make that call.
Yeah.
Most of them do not want that kind of liability. But here's what I did. I did exactly that. So that, you know, I violated literally every rule that I now have. And I
this
said,
is how you developed your rules.
Yeah, I said if we're ever 60 days behind that you can go pick up a deed. Now, the one thing I never did was put a deed in escrow. And this guy knows that this property has probably increased by $200,000 since he sold it. And he was waiting to contact me until after 60 days. You know, he doesn't want this resolved. He wants the house back.
And, yeah.
This isn't where I was going with this whole episode, but we might as well. I think it's still good content.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a great example as to why you shouldn't wholesale subject twos.
So here's the funniest part about this deal is that this is why you should never do that performance deed. So if I put in 60 days, right? That way, hey, you know, something happened, you know, but something just got lost in the shuffle, you know, you're not screwed after missing one payment. You know, I put 60 days. What happened is we contacted the buyer and the buyer's like, wait, what? I've made payment every single month. You know, I got records of it. What happened was is one of two things. The third party servicing company didn't send the payment to the right lender, or the lender changed and no one was notified.
Oh yeah, because they sell loans.
Yeah, so
all the time.
No one kept up with, you know, what was going on with the loan, and no one contacted the servicing company to let them know that, you know, new
servicer stepped in.
That's
probably the most likely scenario.
Yeah.
New servicer steps in, the servicing company didn't get that notice, so they're still making payments to the last loan company.
Yep.
And now all of a sudden the loan's in default because the new servicer isn't receiving payments.
Yeah, and the seller's not happy because two things. One is, hey, it's been 6-7 years since we did this. We're in a different spot in our lives now. So the husband and wife are divorced. They're both on the loan. Wife has picked up and improved her credit, but now just got two late payments on her mortgage.
Yeah.
Guy, maybe not as much, but still got two late payments on his, you know, credit.
Yeah.
And on top of which, they probably have talked about how they could get this property back, and basically have hit the lottery, right?
Yeah, so, right. Yeah. Now they're like, yeah, let's take this thing back and we'll sell it.
And could you see this could end up in court? You know, even though it's been explained to everyone, look, you know, it's kind of your fault, Mr. Seller, because you're the one that's got to kind of keep track of this. And he's like, well, no. I gave that information to Jeff, and Jeff said, I gave that information to so-and-so that gave that information to the buyer. Okay. you know, could you end up in court and, you know, paint a picture? Of course.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not what you want. So, as much as I have done a lot of subject to deals. That's actually how I got started in real estate. 20 plus years ago. And I still love subject to deals. And we're going to talk about subject to couple examples. I'm doing a subject to deal next week. But you've got to be careful with them. There is a reason. That's why I'd much rather, if I'm going to be the end buyer, and I'll show you what I mean by that, where, you know, I'm the one that's responsible. I have no problem with subject to, because let's say that something went bad, you know, in my life, and I can no longer make this payment, whatever. Rather than hurt the seller, rather say, Mr. Seller, I'll get it fixed, even though I have no plan to get it fixed, and ultimately it's just going to keep hurting you, I can deed back that property, right? Whether the seller wants it or not. I can say, look, this, I at least want to give you a fighting chance here. You know, see if you can go sell it to someone else, see if you can rent it, see whatever you can do. I don't want to put you, you know, months behind where, you know, your options are limited. But here's the property back. You know, when I've wholesaled it, you know, now we're two more people deep, right? So I wholesaled it to another buyer who then sold it to an owner occupant. And you know, now the owner occupant's like, wait, what? I've made payments every single month. I put down a lot of money. I got a whole bunch of equity. And you know, now you're telling me that someone screwed up. What? And it might be him.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah, it's a very messy situation.
Yeah, this just shows you. Yeah, it just shows you how ugly it can get.
Yes. So
I'll have to follow up with you on that one.
Yeah, but the good thing is that I basically told my seller, I said, you knew that I was not going to be involved, that I was going to give this deal to someone else. That was made clear. So I'm going to put you in touch with who I gave it to, because I can't help you. I don't know what's been done from here. So this is the person that's going to be a lot more informative, help you get this resolved. I'm happy to help you in any way that I can, but other than that, I'm a go-between, and it's only going to create more lag time dealing with me. So for the time being, at least I'm out of that, but I can see where the seller says, I want it all and I'm not getting it. So I'm frustrated. I have just enough money to hire an attorney that thinks that, they can pull something out of this. So,
All right. So, well, let's,
that wasn't the direction I was planning on going, but,
right.
Yeah. We do have a couple of subject to deals that I guess we can talk about next episode, but keep in mind those three rules that I came up with, and there's a reason why I have those three rules.
And that's a great example, Jeff, and this should help people understand the risks involved when you try to wholesale a subject to, especially if whoever you're selling it to then sells it to another owner occupant or a landlord or what may be the case, right?
Yeah.
So great example. Never wholesale subject twos. Try not to take them full term. And just be upfront with your sellers.
No performance deeds.
Yeah. And no performance deeds.
Seriously, no one knew anything. This guy was seriously waiting until it was 60. He called me on day 62.
Wow.
Because he wanted to make sure it was 60 days behind.
Yeah. Wow.
Yep.
Well, yeah. Let me know how that one goes.
Yeah, I will. Hopefully I never find out.
Okay, guys. Well, I think we'll end this one here with talking about subject twos and just understanding the risks involved and the rules that you guys should have for yourself as well, because, we're learning from Jeff's experience here so that you don't have to go put yourself in the same situation to learn the same lessons that he has. So
I tell you exactly how many times I did it this way?
How many?
One. One time. Yeah. I never ever offered a performance deed to held in escrow ever. I don't know why I did in this time. I don't think normally any other time that I've taken subject to, I'm usually the one that's selling to an owner occupant. I don't even know why I decided to wholesale this one. Probably because of the timing of it when I was just getting back into real estate. Getting the length of the loan, that's probably the least of all the issues, but I promise you that's going to come up again some point down the road too. So it doesn't matter how many times you do it. Now, if you do it at least once, you could run into a problem just like I did.
Oh man. Okay. Well, guys, I hope you've enjoyed this episode. On our next episode, we will get into using examples for subject twos. So we'll run through those numbers. But hey, this was a great episode just to explain those risks and the rules that you should have for yourself, and really just learn from Jeff's experience here. Because you're right, you do one of these, and it could be that one that comes back at you, like this one is. So. Yep. All right, guys, you can find all of our episodes at thecreativefinancingpodcast.com. That's our archive. Please join our Facebook group at the Creative Financing Podcast on there. We're trying to build that community. If you guys are interested in Jeff's apprenticeship program, please email Rebecca. That's Rebecca at weofferoptions.com. And he has two different kinds of apprenticeship programs. One kind of do it at your own pace, and then kind of a faster, what would you call it? A faster
accelerated
course. Thank you. So if you're interested in that, email Rebecca. And then lastly, if you want to pick up from this podcast and you want to continue your education, join the Creative Financing Academy. This is a video-based course where you can sit down with your financial calculator. You can walk through these deals one by one, just as Jeff has, and with Jeff following along with him. You can walk through these deals and see how he really structure them so that hopefully it can solidify it in your mind. And then you can go out there and use creative financing strategies in your own business. If you're interested in that, email Jeff. That's J-E-F-F at weofferoptions.com for that. And he has a video that he can send you right away so you can get a taste of it. Get a feel for it, see if it's something that you like and enjoy. You want to say any last words, Jeff?
Join our Facebook group. It's free. The Creative Financing Podcast Facebook group. Ask your questions, bring your deals. The Creative Financing Academy, strictly how to use creative financing in your business, either as a supplement or as the main component. Our apprentice program, virtual wholesaling with a creative financing component. So yeah, let's work together. If you want to take your business and make it something that you can be super proud of quickly, let me know.
Right. Cool. Okay, guys, till next time, go out there and create some terms.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Financing Podcast. We need your feedback to continue to bring you the best strategies in creative financing. So please subscribe, rate, and review this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. We greatly appreciate your ear, and please pass this on. Until next time, create some terms. This show offers general information on creative financing strategies and real estate investments. Nothing contained herein should be considered personal, legal, or financial advice. Every state has individual laws governing the use and type of documents used to execute strategies discussed herein. You should consult with a local licensed real estate broker and attorney before relying on any information contained herein. Information is not guaranteed, and opinions of the guests are their own. Profits are not guaranteed, and there's always inherent risk in real estate investing.